comic.com here at the 10th anniversary of the Calgary Expo. I am here with Mike and Erica Ruth. This is the second time we're doing this interview because the first time I forgot to hit the button.
And
it was magic. So we're going to try to recreate some magic here. And basically I'm going to let them just talk. What are you guys working on right now?
We are working on a Viking horror story called Widow's Wake, which is something we've been excited about for a long time. It's a comic about Vikings. It's a comic about Valhalla. It's a comic about expectations and loss and relationships and what really is left behind on the field of battle. You know, Vikings die in battle, and that's the great goal is to be taken by the Valkyries to go up to Valhalla and wait for Odin's call to battle in the last battle of Ragnarok. And that's a treasured thing. It's an honored thing. It's a sought after thing. They're hungry for their own death. But what they discover in their last moments of life when those Valkyries do descend upon them is that perhaps the Valkyries have come for an entirely different reason. And so we have a bit of a horror slant to the story. It's going to be mostly about, you know, relationships, actually. But yeah, we're excited about it. It's been in the works for a while. It's been in my head since 1987 when I heard Motorhead's Death Forever. You should just look up that song. It's a great song. Listen to it. Listen to the lyrics, and you'll totally understand what this book is about. It's about that question, you know. You can, regardless of what your faith is, whether you're Christian or Muslim or whatever you are, or you're pagan or you worship the great squid in the sky or a giant bowl of spaghetti in space, whatever you worship, it's all about how you feel in those last moments before your life ends and how comfortable you are in your own skin. And have the decisions and choices you've made in your life, will the payoff be there that you're after? And our book kind of makes these guys ask those questions, and you know, men and women. Our book's about a shield maiden, actually. I'm starting to ramble now, so I'm gonna let Erica have a little taste here.
Co-creator and writer credit, I would assume. Erica.
No, partial writer credit, because it's something...
Partial writer. Well, yeah, Mike, like, more plot than... Plot and art, and then Erica, if you were to break it down in that kind of sense, would be...
Maybe Mike's like the 30,000-foot view, and maybe I'm getting closer to the 10,000-foot view, if that makes sense.
She also does all the graphic design for the book. She's laying out the book, doing the typography, the logo, and I'm really grateful for that because I'm useless with that kind of stuff. I love to draw, but I don't know how to assemble it all in the way that she can, so we're pretty great partners in that regard, too.
And the logo is definitely one of the best I've seen. Clean, crisp.
Oh,
I really do love that logo.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, I would say that we're really both writing it equally because the story is just the product of hours and hours and thousands of kilometers of road trip jam out sessions and walks and hikes and everything else that we've done where we've just endlessly sort of discussed the story and started to create the universe around it. And Mike is like, Mike knows... Viking lore like it's a language to him. So it's been great for me because I've learned a lot more. I mean, I know a lot about it too, but I've learned so much more in discussion with him about it. And then we've been able to sort of determine, hey, so how much of this do we want to keep very true to what history has presented of what we know about the Vikings, and like how much do we want to like tinker with that and make it our own? So
yeah, there's so many tasty bits of Viking folkloric stuff that to ignore it would be a crime. I mean, they have tremendous gods and monsters and creatures and different kinds of humans and trolls and all these wonderful things that may or may not set foot in our book, but they'll be spoken about because they were part of the, you know, regular language. You know, it's a... I don't know. It's a... We want to keep it semi-historical, but, you know, there's always room to kind of embellish that. I mean, everyone always, you know, we grew up with Vikings with horned helmets and, you know, only men went to Valhalla and all this kind of stuff. But we've discovered so much more. I mean, yeah, exactly. Ragnar, you know, the original blonde Ragnar. But yeah, I mean, and those are great films, too, just because they existed, because someone made a movie about Vikings. And, I mean, and now, of course, the TV show. We're actually wicked. We were super behind. The show had been running for 2 years. The History Channel Vikings show had been running for 2 years before we even had a chance to watch it. We don't actually have a cable TV at home. We just... if I had cable at home, I would probably not get as much drawing done. We also keep our video games disconnected for the same reason. I think that's the number one thing comic people out there making comics have to do is unplug the PlayStation. Seriously, take the Xbox and throw it off the balcony because you're not going to get your comics done.
As soon as there's a Viking game, I'll let you know, and then maybe you plug it back in.
Well, that's the whole thing. Skyrim. Everyone's like, oh, your stuff looks like it's from Skyrim. And have you ever played Skyrim? And, you know, I'm afraid to play Skyrim because it looks like something, a place I want to live. And I think I would probably have lost the last 2 years of my life if I actually had that game. So it's been forbidden to enter our home. But all of our friends that, you know.
No, by me.
No. Well, you're always whipping them to you know, get the book going. So.
Well, that's only because I come from, like, you know, I have an office job, and I come from a corporate design background and working with a substantial teamwork background, we'll say. So I have a tendency to be a little bit more like, cool, what's our drop-dead end date? And let's, you know, work backwards from that. And Mike comes at it from the, I want to make this book as perfect as humanly possible, and I will stop at nothing to make that happen, so I don't really care how much time it takes. So yeah, one of the challenges actually for us as a creator team is to determine how much of Mike's perfectionism gets to reign and how much of my deadline is God, you know, gets to reign.
Like, I mean, I'll draft up a page and I'll start inking it and start rendering the way I like to render things. The whole book's going to be drawn on toned paper, different colored, different earth tones, and it's going to be drawn with black ink and white ink, so it's going to kind of pop off the backgrounds. And you know, it's just how I've been working lately, and I really get excited about it. But, you know, there's times when you do a sketch, and it's like, and Erica's like, oh, that sketch is perfect, don't touch that. And I'm like, yeah, but it's got to be inked, it's got to look like the whole book. And she's like, no. You know, there's some situations where a page doesn't have to have a fully finished, fully rendered, every panel has to be perfect. Sometimes you can just let it go a little bit. And I mean, you know, and come what may with that. I mean, I to me, that's like so opposite to how my brain works. I want everything to be presented exactly how I want people to see it. But, you know, there is an energy that's lost sometimes when you ink things. There's a, when you ink, you destroy while you create. And so there's a niceness and a subtlety that sometimes gets lost with pencils when you start inking over them. And so Eric has been very quick to like say, hey, you know what, maybe this panel can be just let go at pencils. And she reminds me of other examples of great comics that, you know, like
Carrie Nord comes to mind.
Carrie Nord, of course. For me, actually, it goes back a little further to Mike Grell, the Longbow Hunter series.
Right.
You open up the Longbow Hunter series anywhere randomly in that graphic novel, you'll find a page that has a traditionally inked color, inked panel, maybe with a bit of watercolor on it. You'll see a gray Metaint paper drawn in pencil and white pencil. You'll see, you know, a sketch dropped on there. And, you know, the story still works. You know, not every panel is treated with the same hard line, the same approach. Mike just you know, let it be an art book. It's a beautiful book, whether you like the character or the story or not. I personally think it's one of the greatest of all time. But it's because of the way the book was presented. It's always stuck with me that, you know, maybe a book doesn't have to be such a certain format. Maybe you can just kind of let it go. And
I think it drives the story. I mean, I think there's this kind of preconception about comic art that everything is heavily inked and heavily completed and heavily colored and that sort of thing. And I would say a lot of times that is the case with whatever it is that you're picking up at your local comic shop on, you know, every week. But I think that we're trying to maybe think about how can we harness Mike's art to drive the story as well, not just illustrate the story, but actually sort of drive forward the story's momentum in how it's been completed, either highly, highly polished or just left to be almost a bit of an implication. So, again,
and it's also to drive the story and get it out on time, I think, you know.
We've set
deadlines for ourselves on this project, and we've missed a few deadlines. You know, we wanted to launch it at Heroes in Charlotte last year, and then it was going to be Fan Expo, and, you know, it's... We both work 9-to-5 jobs. I work actually a 24/7 job. I'm actually not supposed to be here at the expo. I'm supposed to be at home fixing a toilet right now back in Ontario. But you know, it's I'm a superintendent of a building, and so it takes away from the project sometimes. And you know, I had a lost a bunch of time this winter to the project. So we set our own deadlines. So it's not like we're letting anybody down other than the people who've been supporting us. But you know, we don't have an editor going, "Hey, where's my book?" It's us. You know, we're the editor. We're the driving force behind it. So you know, our arbitrary deadlines that we set to give ourselves inspiration have not been met in every case. But we're moving forward as best we can. And I figure anything worth doing is worth doing well in the way we want to do it. But Erica's, you know, awesome to remind me that, hey, you know what, this page looks good as it is, ink that panel, the rest of it's nice, and let's just move on and get the story told. So, you know, the story is, you know, it's in pieces right now, but originally it was just going to be a little short horror teaser story, but because of the delays, we've actually had the chance to breathe and have perspective on where the story could go. And even when you're telling a little tiny horror story, you know, 8 or 10 page story, you still have to build that universe. It still has to make sense. And so the more you start going down that rabbit hole, the more you realize, oh, we can flesh this out, we can add this, we can start to expand on this. And so it's given us good perspective. But yeah, I'm excited to get it out too. I want to get that first one, that first missile launch, so that we can start to build up our arsenal and figure out how else we can hit people. I mean, I just hope everyone likes it. So far, the response online every Wednesday has been great. I usually post Widow's Wake stuff pretty much every day, but every Wednesday I specifically hashtag Widow's Wake Wednesday, and it's like sometimes a character sketch or a panel or a page or whatever. But it's been a tremendous. I'm getting a stronger response to that kind of work than I am, you know, when I hashtag Batman after a drawing of Joker or something like that. You can hashtag Batman on a picture of mac and cheese and get more likes than, you know what I mean, than anything else. But I'm finding now I'm hashtagging Widow's Wake or hashtagging, you know, Viking stuff, and I'm getting a stronger response to that work than I am to the fan art stuff, which typically, you know, the Deadpools and the Harley Quinns and things like that typically are most popular. They're actually my response to those isn't as strong as to Widow's Wake, and that's I can't even tell you it's an immeasurable amount of thanks and gratitude I have for that, because it's a great surprise. I mean, we had someone show up at Montreal Comic Con last year dressed as a character from our comic book that doesn't even exist yet, and I don't know that it gets much better than that.
Yeah, the hashtag Batman is one of the secrets of the internet.
It is.
And you just completely ruined it for everybody. So, you know, you
I'm just going to invent a new hashtag now that's going to be like the hashtag, the Batman hashtag, but like times a bajillion.
Hashtag like the Batman hashtag. Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
Hashtag everything I just said.
So based on the great reception even I've seen online, I mean, obviously with a site like All Comic, you know, with the Allfather references and the Ravens and everything, and just my own Viking love, I was all over this a year ago when I first started seeing it or whenever. Do you plan on crowdfunding? Do you plan on pitching as well? I mean, I know there's a lot of crowdfunding I've seen where they'll crowdfund it and then, like, Dark Horse will pick it up or Image or somebody like that.
Well, I mean, certainly, we actually... I mean, there's a few people who are interested in it, for sure, but I mean, until we have that first book done, it's really hard to say what's real, what's in front of us. But yeah, crowdfunding, I mean, the success of it is incredible. I've seen, like, friends of mine, their projects have gone through the roof, and they've gotten 10 and 20 times what they asked for, excuse me, to print their projects, and... So definitely crowdfunding is something that we've considered, and everyone's like, hey, why don't you kickstart this? Why don't you kickstart that? And I want to. But my whole thing is I want the book to be like 99% done before I do that. For as many great success stories of Kickstarter out there, there's also people for whom Kickstarter has been a terrible tornado that tore up their life because they had more funding or more support than they thought they were going to have, and then they had to deliver a book that wasn't completed or wasn't even near completed. You know, it's they have production issues or there's printing issues or things that happen. I mean, you can never plan for everything, but the organization that goes into something like a big Kickstarter campaign is pretty intense. Like, we know the amount of work that goes into it just from friends of ours who've had tremendous success with theirs. But I know fellows in the independent comic realm who've had their Kickstarters go successful and then kind of had their lives around it sort of crumble or have to change in an effort to satisfy all the promises they made or the incentives that they offered because of things that go wrong. I had a friend of mine who did a comic book a few years ago that I supported, and they had action figures and buttons and all kinds of things, and everything came out well, but the action figures didn't. The action figures were cheap and they broke and they were kind of horrible, and you know, it was from a place in Mexico or something that was doing them, and it really created a huge problem. He had to quit his job and basically spend his days at the post office just constantly mailing stuff out. He just didn't have the resources in place to make it happen. So you hear stories like that and it's kind of discouraging. So for me and Erica, I think we both are on the same page. The project is going to be like near completion, and we'd be crowdfunding it just for the printing costs and distribution.
Yeah, I think you need to have all your ducks in a row. I mean, it's basically like running any business, right? This, even if you're looking after producing your own comic book and everything, you need to be aware of the fact that there's going to be a whole logistical operation behind that in order to support how you're going to get it out. So it means for us that it's actually like we're producing two different projects. You know, we're producing the book itself, and then then all of the marketing and the promotion and the sending and everything else afterwards that we have to look after. So we're incredibly lucky to have some really amazing friends who have given us all kinds of fantastic insight on how we can best do this. We've got lots of support in terms of that. And I just think that I love the concept of crowdfunding. I just think it's amazing, and it's so genuine, and it puts such a power into a project when other people feel that they can have a stake in it like that. Like, I love that, and I would never want to ever let any of our supporters down. So I would absolutely be, 100% about getting everything, all the ducks lined up, so to speak, so that we could then produce exactly what we want to produce on time. And make sure that everyone gets it. And I think also part of that is just coming from the knowing that we've had some setbacks in the last year due to our own logistics and our own life and everything else like that. I wouldn't want any of that to impede actually getting the book out once it's completed. So
yeah, the people who support Kickstarters and support these kind of projects, Indiegogo, all these different things, I mean, they literally make dreams come true. They give a creator a chance to stay at home and have the lights, have a working fridge and the power to their house, and the heat is turned on during the wintertime while they create and make this thing that is so important to them. And I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I've been an illustrator since the mid 90s, and I've worked for every kind of corner of the business. I've done small charity stuff. I've worked in the medical illustration realm. I've worked in, children's books. I did 50 graphic novels for Scholastic Books during the early 2000s. I mean, it was pretty intense. So I got distracted by the food cart that just drove by. So yeah, I mean, when you want to create something, when you the whole trick to making comics is you got to keep the lights on while you're doing it. And when you're making your own comics, you don't have a paycheck attached, you don't have a funder, you don't have patrons making it happen. Well, Kickstarter and these different things are fantastic for that. So it's exciting. They make dreams come true. And that's really what it is. It's very real. It's very touching. It's very humbling. I mean, every Wednesday, the response I'm getting to the Widow's Wake snapshots I show are just, I can't believe it. I can't believe the numbers. I can't believe the support and the excitement around this project. So now the pressure is on, and you've been kicking my pants a little bit the last year, and I've been appreciating it, because it's like, hey, people actually give a shit.
Pants kicker credit.
Yeah. You're going to be in the book as, the pants kicker, the motivator, motivating ass kicks. And we've had some friends in the industry as well supporting us. We can't wait for your book. I don't want to drop too many names, but we have some close friends who basically are just like, where's my Viking book, Mike? And I get these texts out of the blue like, hey, where's my Viking book, Mike? And I mean, that's huge. Like, that's huge.
Stanley's really looking forward to my Viking book. No big deal,
We were we were pretty blown away, even just the process when Mike actually put the pre-order up available on his Big Cartel site, just for the sketchbook that we were producing.
Yeah, that blew up really fast.
Oh, it blew up really fast, and it was amazing and so humbling and so anxiety-inducing for me, because I was literally at the computer doing the layouts when that was happening, and I was like, Mike was like, this is amazing. We were just so blown away by the support, and I was like, shit, this doesn't even exist yet. And then I made that noise.
That's how excited I was when I finally saw something.
That's
as well.
That's my super design noise, by the way. When I'm like at the computer, I just opera sing. So anyway,
I saw Mike drawing the thing yesterday, and that was the sound he's making the entire time.
Totally.
So
yeah, it's like a drone.
I don't even know how.
It's an operatic drone. But it was it was very real for me, because I was like, I felt the pressure, like, we need to produce something really, really as amazing as this feels, getting that kind of support. So I was very, very gung-ho about, let's produce something that's as beautiful and as inspiring as how inspired we felt just from all the support that we got for the sketchbook. That was, I don't think I'm ever going to forget how amazing that was. I've been an artist my entire life. I'm a designer. I've been a designer for like 15 years. And designers tend to be like the forgotten part of a creative project. And that's kind of what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to not necessarily always show up for that, but to get
designer letters, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's all the kind of slightly secondary positions in terms of no less important, but somewhat secondary and somewhat maybe forgotten because they're not in the forefront of or is instantly recognizable.
I was interviewing Ryan Ferrier.
Yeah.
And he letters, right?
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, what do you think about letterers not necessarily getting like the credit, so to speak?
Right.
And he said it the best that I've heard yet is, if you're a good letterer and you do your job well, people don't notice the letters because it's just part of the story.
Yes,
it's just
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I would agree with that. Like, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of times people don't recognize... They don't recognize how the design framework and how it holds something together or how it drives the story or how it's presenting the work. And that's good. It means it's doing its job correctly. But it just... I personally, and this is, I guess is more like an Evan Ego discussion, but it was, I was just so blown away to be part of a creative team that was getting such support, and being also called out for it as well. That was really, really amazing. I mean, I'm the only person holding it together at like my day job in terms of, that sounds really mean. I don't mean it quite like that. I am seriously the only person. Who has
Hopefully they don't listen to this. You know.
Yeah, no, they won't. But I mean, I hold a lot of responsibility in my day job. And a lot of it is in design and marketing. And so, but I don't ever get the kind of, there's no accolade. There's no real like pat on the back. Hey, thanks for that. It was just more or less like.
They're paying you money. You just
right. The
it.
Paycheck yeah. is the pat on the back, right? Yeah. Well, this was a real actual pat on the back too. And that was pretty stunning.
And how many of those did you print? How many of those sketchbooks did you guys end up doing?
Our first printing was 100. we have just done a second printing because we sold out the 100. They're gone.
Well, and you know, we didn't
write second printing on them. Like
yes. We did because you know it was funny when we. I just had this idea right before we were going under this battery of Comic-Con tours, and I said, I'm so disappointed that the book's not done. We never missed a production deadline due to a bad winter, like I was saying. And I was like, I got to give them something. There's got to be something they can put their hands on, you know? So I searched far and wide to find actually, not that far. I found a local guy, in the end, who was going to produce the sketchbook for us. We wanted it to be comic book size so it would fit with the series when the series is ready because we don't want to, you know, I love odd size printed books, but I mean, having a bit of retail experience in a comic book shop in Oakville where I live, I mean, we hate getting odd-sized books because they're so hard to display and they're tricky to, you know, they're tricky.
Them, like, from the design and the aesthetics so much, yeah. But then there's, yeah, I mean, there's just, they pose a logistical challenge that...
There's nothing like an oversized hardcover. I got,
I got
that Terminator and RoboCop, like, artist edition. And it's even bigger than the IDW, like, Hellboy one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know where to put the other ones. And this one's like... You know, it needs it longer, and you're just like,
oh. It needs its own room.
We have some questions
you know.
By the 44 Flood team out of Chicago, like
yeah,
Tome and Melancholia and stuff like this. They produce these gloriously gorgeous books, like freak out beautiful books, but they're massive. Like one of them is fully the size of our living room.
Yeah.
Our entire
the Steranko edition too is like it's like at our comic shop. You like open it like this, and you're like, oh man, this is great. But it's literally like,
where do we put it?
Yeah, like, you know, I need a stand, and it needs to like have a light on it, singular light on it.
Yes. Yeah,
sit by itself on a
and then
on a
operatic
pillar.
Singing in the background.
Well, of course,
yeah,
that goes
of course, naturally.
Saying.
Yeah.
So for the sketchbook, we wanted to find a cover stock that would allow us to have a cover on the back because I've done a million sketch covers. I love doing them. And I wanted to find a decent cover stock. Not all the companies out there producing sketch covers, and I hope they're listening, not all of them do a tremendous job on the stock choice. Some of them are really hard to draw on. They're repellent to ink or markers. So we wanted to have something that was like, you know, that had a bit of tooth to it, that felt like, you know, the Widow's Wake book. And so we made the sketchbook available. We had most of the sketches were stuff that we'd already shared on Instagram and things like that, but there's a few extra things. And, you know, we put the idea of, hey, who'd be interested in a sketchbook? And we got a good response. So then we made a pre-order available after we had kind of assembled the basics of the book. And we made it available on my Big Cartel shop, which is just MikeRuth.BigCartel.com. And we said, oh, we're printing 100 of these because we couldn't afford a big number of you know, obviously there's huge price breaks when you want to get 5,000 of something done.
Well, but the quality of the paper, too. Like it's a really, really, really great quality book.
So yeah, we're happy
like,
with it.
That's not a cheap thing.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Because we were doing a smaller run, we were getting quotes from different printers back. Some of them were as low as, you know, $5 a copy, and some were as high as $8 or $9 a copy. And it's like, well, geez, man, like, I got to sell these at comic cons, etc. I want to sell them for $10. I don't want it to be outside of anyone's reach. So you know, we ended up getting a pretty good rate for 100 copies. But then we made the mistake of saying we're only printing 100. And I thought, oh, that would be good if we sold even 10 of those. Because I, you know, you as a creator, if you're me, you don't really have. I don't know. It's like a...
Your own worst critic?
Yeah, like I'm kind of humble in the... I don't feel like I have a giant ego with regards to my own work. So when anyone likes my stuff, I kind of freak out, you know? Like someone comes to my table and buys a print from Widow's Wake or a Viking thing that I've done. It's like Christmas Day. You know, it's a huge thing. So when we put the book online, the pre-order, I said, the book's not even physically produced yet. Let's put the pre-order on and see what happens. And I set my phone down after I launched that on Instagram, and my phone just went ding, 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 ding. And I looked at Erica, and our eyes bugged out of our heads, and the phone just lit up for 3 hours with sales. Bing, bing, bing. We sold 70 copies online before we even... before we even went to a con, and we were knocked over by that. So we had our production costs in hand before we even actually had to go and pay the bill on the book. So it was, it's an immeasurable thing. There's no words for how awesome that was. But then we were like, shit, we should have printed more. So we've made a second printing now. And
we had a lot more people asking for them. We had already sold out first printing. And both Mike and I were like, this is much more than we had ever expected. So we've definitely done a second printing.
I mean, 100 is not... a small number, right?
It's not a...
You still gotta put that money out there, you know?
So, the second printing is exactly the same as the first, only it says second printing, and
I'll have to check mine. Mine better be first.
Yours is first. You're good.
Yours is first, of course.
Yeah. And so we still have them available.
Dear
and
eBay.
So, yeah, and I mean, it was a good little logistics experiment, or exercise, rather, in terms of getting the printing done, because we were able to determine a little bit more of the direction we want to go to actually have the book printed when we get to
it. Actually, our quest now is to, when we print the first issue, we want to have a sketch cover back as well, like on the sketchbook, but we're searching for a cover stock, like a supplier for a nice kind of roughish... kind of craft paper kind of feel, but something sturdy enough that will take inks, because the whole book, like I said, is drawn on toned paper. I would love to be able to do sketch covers on a toned, or like a gray or a pale brown paper, so that I could do that white and ink, that white and black ink, rather, kind of, you know, make it look like the comic book. And I don't know if anyone's ever done a toned sketch cover before, and I'm sure someone has, but
yeah,
not
the big guys.
Yeah, and I just think it would be interesting. I don't know, I just feel like because the whole book like looks like that, I would like to give fans who support the book, you know, a sketch on the back drawn in the same style of the book. So, you know, what we had to go with was a heavy white paper for this one, but it looks good. And but we're still searching for, you know, the right supplier for that kind of paper, because I think that will be make it a really more, an even more unique thing.
Oh, for sure, and especially if you keep the same design, you know, with the little border and the logo right there and everything. I mean, it's a good, bow for the package, I think.
Yeah, the herringbone border that Erica created, like, she kind of, I wasn't even thinking of that, and she's like, yeah, this is what I've got in my mind, and she drafted it out on Illustrator, and I was like, that is awesome. Like, and, you know, that herringbone texture, those stitching shows up in a lot of Viking fabrics.
The texture is like, it's a very well-known actual metal inlay technique. That it's something, I mean... because I'm a silversmith on the side, and I really...
On the side of the side.
On the side of the side. I got so many sides, man. It's crazy.
Multifaceted.
Sure. But, I mean, I've studied quite a lot of Scandinavian metalwork and design and that sort of stuff, just because that's the aesthetic that I really adore. And that inlay, that herringbone inlay, it's quite common, actually. But it's only common in a certain era. So it's only a couple of years where it was very common, and then it wasn't anymore. Yeah, and it's produced in the most amazing fashion, in that lines are actually kind of engraved in into the metal. Silver wire is placed on top and then pounded into place, which is just so Viking. It's great. But I just love the... I really like the energy of it, and Mike really liked the way it looked, so it just seemed like it was a... good fit for the project. And so that's where I get to have a little bit of fun, is trying to create some of those little visual hooks that'll go into the book.
Well, and just to touch on Erica as a silversmith too, I mean, for me, but down our apartment is a two-story apartment, and she's on the upstairs, that's where her studio is, and I'm on the main floor drawing. And, you know, when she's up in her studio, she's making things out of silver, and she's pounding, and I hear an anvil being pounded with a hammer. And I'm telling you, man,
sorry neighbors,
but like, for me, it matches my heartbeat with regards to this project. When I'm hearing that, like, that tang, tang, tang on the, and she's pounding something out with fire and metal, I mean, it's... Oh, I don't even know how to say it without, you know, it's bonerific. It's awesome.
Mike, you can't say on this podcast.
Oh, man. All right.
There's no fucking way I'm gonna put that in here, okay?
it's really inspiring. And, you know, and the other great thing about Widow's Wake, too, is Erica is making things that are appearing. Erica's making things that are appearing in the book. Like, you know, you'll see brooches and fibulas and different kind of little Viking things that are being represented physically. You know, we do Comic-Cons when we're touring with the book. We want to have a box of Erica's jewelry as well. And people can actually pick up and hold things that appear in the book and maybe buy them and put them on their own cloak or attach them to their own helmet, you know?
And I want some now, so, you know. Where are they? That's all I'm saying.
She makes awesome stuff.
I'll get on that.
She's getting on it.
I think we're running out of time, unless you guys want to keep going. I mean, I'm good. I think half an hour is good. I just want to let you guys go. I want to make up for, obviously, the failure the day before.
Oh, no.
So,
still
afterwards, I was like, oh, it was so good, but damn it. Where can we find you guys on social media and all that fun stuff?
Okay, on Instagram, I am the Lady Smith Erica. Erica is with a K. The proper way it should be spelled.
The Nordic way.
On Twitter, I am the _lady_smith, which is apparently too many underscores.
That was my comment last time. Too many underscores.
Right.
One is enough.
My Etsy shop is theladysmithcanada.etsy.com.
Awesome.
And Mike?
I am at Uncouth Ruth on Instagram and on Twitter. And I have a Facebook page. I've only got a personal Facebook page, but send me a friend request, and I'll see if you're a real human being, and I'll line you up with I don't even know how to say that. Yeah, whatever. I'll add you.
He might be your friend, maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe,
if you're cool enough.
If you're a real person, you know, and you can prove
that,
or a robot. I'm not going to judge. But yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram. No. My website is MikeRuth.com. It will be updated soon. It hasn't been updated in a long time, like I would probably say 2 years. So there's a lot of, like, comic book stuff on there, but no Widow's Wake stuff on that site. So we don't actually have a Widow's Wake website.
Should probably secure that.
Yeah, we should probably nail that down, yeah. But, but yeah, you can find
me. Right,
yeah, but you can just always check. Yeah, you can always check hashtag Widow's Wake Wednesday or hashtag Widow's Wake, and you'll find all the artwork we've done and any little notes and little process bits that you've seen. Yeah, it's been exciting, and thanks so much.
Thank you guys for doing it again, and I will keep kicking your asses for this book because I want it even more now. Twice as bad. So thank you.
Thank you. We'll give you the official pants kicker credit, like
sounds
I said.
Good.
Yeah.
I won't say no.
Yeah.
Cheers, man.
Thanks, guys.